Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody.
Welcome
to 100 Words or Less, the podcast. I'm your host, Ray Harkins, and thank you for joining me. I'm trying to keep it a little quiet because, my wife is sleeping next door, and it would just be rude if I started yelling and getting super enthusiastic about a podcast, right? But I am. I'm really enthusiastic about this podcast. You want to know why? Because we have an incredible guest. And that guest is Colt Cabana. Now, some of you that aren't hip to the wrestling world are probably like, who's Colt Cabana? And that's totally fine. I didn't know about him up until maybe about 2 or so years ago, where a lot of my friends who are wrestling enthusiasts mentioned to me Colt and his podcast. And basically, he does what I do, except in the wrestling world. And he has people on, you know, people that you undoubtedly recognize from, like, you know, CM Punk to Jake the Snake Roberts and all those people. But the real reason I wanted to have him on was because the parallels between independent wrestling and independent music are practically the same. Because independent wrestling, you know, is done in like VFW halls and other spaces in which we do shows. And they function the same exact way, where it's like, all right, well, let's put on a show Friday and Saturday night, bring some wrestlers in, pay them some money, and then hopefully we'll get some people to, purchase tickets and do that. And I just always been fascinated with it ever since I really started to become aware of the independent wrestling circuit. And Colt is, I mean, he's a lifer. He's dedicated so much of his time and energy and efforts into this, and he's carved a great career for himself. He's traveled all over the world, and basically the dude is a real dude. He has done the work, and he's an incredibly cool guy as well. But I want to tell you, first and foremost, he has a new movie. It's called Wrestling Road Diaries, Volume 3. And basically, it's a behind-the-scenes look at what it is that his life is and what it is that independent wrestlers do. And it ships out November 5th. So go to coltmerch.com, and that's where you can easily grab it. And then the digital is available on November 11th. So do that, because I've seen it, and it's a really, really insightful look at that. And it's also incredibly entertaining. So there you go. But some other business to take care of before we dive into the conversation with Colt. So I'm pretty exhausted because, Halloween, it's always a fun holiday. And when you got kids, you do fun stuff. But I went to Nightmare Before Christmas at the Hollywood Bowl, where they did like a live scoring of the movie. And they had, you know, the original cast, the voice cast, come back and do, like, you know, Danny Elfman and Paul Rubens and Catherine O'Hara. And I took my son to it. And Recently, you've probably noticed a theme in the intros of this show is that music is unbelievable. And I know that's such an obvious statement, but to watch, you know, my son's like five, and watching him be affected by this music, like we've listened to this soundtrack now for, I don't know, going on 4 months straight. Like he has most of the songs memorized. And yeah, just watching his joy, like, I mean, frankly, it just made me cry. And I was so moved by it. And plus, the concert was absolutely incredible. And so having these experiences and watching other people react to the amazing nature of music is so moving, you know? I mean, it's the same way that, like, I always like to, like, when a band is playing or when, you know, someone's experiencing some piece of art, I always like to look around because it's so fun to see other people's reactions to whether it's like, you know, a band doing really, really good or, you know, a band playing a song that they like. And you kind of just scan the room. You'll find a lot of, either happy faces or people like in complete concentration or people that are being completely emotional. It runs the gamut. And I love that fact. So anyways, music, incredible, right? Still living with my parents, still in the middle of so much stuff. It feels like everything's happening at once. And then all of a sudden, it's like, hey, holidays and everything else, and oh man. But amidst all this, I'm so excited because the next basically 2 months worth of shows are just with people who I've either pursued for a long time or have just been really, really incredible conversations. So basically, we're ending the year extremely, extremely strong. And yeah, we're also going to be having the year-end podcast like we always do, where, you know, me, my friend, Joey Cahill from 613 Own Records, and Jeremy Moll, the vocalist of Touche Amore, and I should say guitarist as well, because he's basically doing a lot of guitar on this record cycle, because, you know, that's what they do. So, yeah, anyways, we're doing a year-end episode where we recap all of our favorite records and stuff like that, and it's always a really, really fun episode, so the planning stages have begun on that because most of you probably don't know, but Joey has now moved from Southern California to Boston. So there's a lot more logistics to cover, but we'll be doing that. So anyways, back to Colt. Yeah, like I said, I had to have him on because, you know, even though he doesn't have like this insanely rich history with independent music, you know, he knows what's up with it. But like I said, the parallels are just so insanely interesting that I could not bring this up to you people, because I think a lot of people, you know, they may have experienced wrestling obviously between the ages of like, you know, 7 and like 12, and then, you know, maybe they grow out of it, or maybe, you know, they get more involved as they grow older. But I just think this is something that should not get short shrift. You know, this is something that there's real work involved in this. There's artistry, there's acting, there's performing. Like, these people are entertainers and they're killing themselves on a nightly basis in places around the country that maybe don't get recognized, in the same way that bands are playing right now as we speak in places that, you know, there's like 10 people watching them, but they're pouring their heart and soul out, and wrestling is the exact same way. So anyways, here's my discussion with Colt. I am so excited to bring it to you. And like I said, go to coltmerch.com and pick up some stuff, because he all of his stuff is entertaining, you know, whether it's DVDs, whether it's awesome shirts, whatever it is. But I hope you become a fan of Colt Cabana after this, because I can tell you for a fact that I was, and I will continue to be. So here's Colt, and I will talk to you after the show's over. I mean, prior to your appearance on WTF, I had heard your name just because, you know, like I mentioned to you when we hung out, whatever, a couple weeks ago, like we have many mutual friends within the context of, you know, the punk and hardcore scene. But, the combination of you appearing on WTF and the fact that, you know, people like, obviously, your good friend CM Punk and other people saying that, like, hey, Colt is like the real deal. Like, if you want to really find out what wrestling is about, like, you know, listen to his podcast, kind of understand where he's coming from. But obviously, since you've, you know, jumped into the world of podcasting and have done a variety of different things, is it fun for you to have people jump into you at kind of different points of your life where it's like, oh, I've been a fan of you for, you know, 15 years. And then other people who are like, oh, I just discovered you last week or whatever. Is that fun for you?
Yeah, you started already. I thought we were, that was great.
That's good. I'm seamless, right? You know?
Yeah. I was going to start it on my end. I didn't, but I did now. Okay, great. Yeah, you know, like, and this has got to be for everyone where I assume that, like, it's just like, I know, like, right, I'm probably the biggest fan of my own work, or like, I'm the greatest historian to my own work. So I'm always just like, especially even with the podcast, it's like, I've been doing it for 6 years. And when people are like, oh, I just started listening, it's like, how could you not be listening for 6 years? I've been doing this.
Right. Right.
Like, not, you don't know everything now from the first 4 years, or, you know, and same with wrestling. So, I understand like my role of like being like this weird gatekeeper to independent wrestling and like letting people into like understanding what it is and then going forth and finding your own people or what it is. And I guess that's what keeps me in check when I'm like, how come you don't know 2001 Mid-American Wrestling, Milwaukee, Wisconsin? You
know? Right. So
there's a little bit of me that's like, oh, yeah, listen, this kid is 19. There's no way he's going to know what you were doing when he was two.
Right, right. Well, no, that's, but it is a good point, because you do, like you said, you're obviously so well, you know, well aware of your own work. But then you do have to. I think where people become, you know, douchey or terrible human beings is when they forget that voice, you know, like when you forget that check, that balance of like, wait a minute, I can't like, you know, be this egotistical person that's like, oh yeah, you don't know me from this time. And it's like, well, you know, people arrive at things at different times.
Yeah. I call my, you know, like I'm always self-aware. And I think that's maybe a little bit of, well, I don't know if I'd call it success, but like, that's what keeps me down to earth. And I think that's why I have a nice, and I don't even know whether like to call it, and you know, you could touch on this of like, do you call like following, fans, friends, you know, like what is it really? You know, like, are people just subscribers to a podcast? I had the theory once where like the idea of getting all these fans was like collecting baseball cards to me a little bit.
Oh yeah.
You know, and it's like, I understand that everyone's really human beings, and like, and it's the only way I'm able to make a living or to make money. But like, that's the only way to like categorize it is like, I need, and like I have them and they're in my collection. And so now it's like, oh, if you now don't like independent pro wrestling and now you like only WWE, it's like, okay, I've traded that baseball card or something.
Right.
So yeah, so like I think being self-aware is a characteristic of myself that I think will be one of my drawing powers, if you will, for a fan or someone who likes me, someone who gets me, is the idea that I'm not trying to be this over the top character that wrestling has always presented. Is that I am trying to be just like you, someone who liked wrestling and now worked really 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 hard to do it and is now doing it and pretty good at it.
Right, right. No, that's a very important point. And that is interesting, the idea of, you know, wrestling around with a definition of a person that respects your work. Because there is that that notion, I mean, you know, obviously drawing the parallels within independent music as well, where it's just like, you know, it's weird to refer to a person as a fan, you know, because you're just like that, you know, usually that brings up an image of like, you know, oh, like I'm Justin Bieber or something. Like, here's my fans, my adoring public, you know. But then it's like, you're like, dude, I'm just doing this random thing. And the people that care about it, like you said, that you, I think you hit it right in the head, where it's like, you just kind of want to call them friends. Because like, even though you may not know them, like there's a reason that they care about you.
Well, wrestling is worse because it's based off of a con, you know.
Right.
It's true. We have a word called, you know, mark. That's what we call the wrestling fans. And it's pretty derogatory. And like, I almost stay away from calling it that, kind of like it's the N word, because I really dislike it. You know, because basically like, you know, a mark was, you know, in the the short story is like in the carnival years ago, you know, when somebody found someone who was a sucker, they would X their back. And so then all the carnies, like, and this isn't wrestling, this is in the carnival itself, they would see the X on the back and they call them over to their, hey, come over to my booth, come over to my booth. And so like, they were telling the other people like who were the suckers who would be engaged and you could give all their money to. And so wrestling is the same way. It's like a con. And all, you know, only in the last 20 years, if even that, like we've started to shy away from that. And I always, from the very beginning, I've always kind of like disliked it, but I started in an era where you know, the guys above me, you know, that I would learn from were always like, they hated their fans. And I know it's the same in music, you know, probably everywhere where guys are just like, they hate them. But I always, you know, I always disliked that so much because I was a fan. And then I crossed over the barrier and I didn't want, you know, like I always look at it like young 16-year-old me, like how impressionable I was and how much just even a wrestler saying hi to me or seeing someone on the, you know, seeing a wrestler somewhere or getting an autograph, like how much that weighs on me. And I always try to, again, being self-aware, I always try to remember the impression it had on me, the impression it had on somebody else. And so like, yeah, the idea of wrestlers hating their fans, it started to change, but it's always like, it's weird because it starts with a con.
Right, right. No, I like that point. And this is, we'll go through your life, but I obviously wanted to kind of pull this, the string of the idea of obviously why I think it would be so interesting for you to, you know, be on the show is the fact that once I became obviously more aware, I mean, I, like every other, you know, I mean, we're the same exact age. I'm, you know, 35. We're, you know, I know you're 36. And so, you know, we obviously the, you know, late 80s, early 90s in regards to, you know, wrestling and WWF was so was important to me. But then obviously, you know, I got consumed by music. I didn't pay attention to wrestling as much. But then once I started to become more aware of the independent wrestling scene, the parallels that I was able to notice and draw from the fact that you are involved in the same exact idea of what it is to be in a DIY punk band, where it's like, you know, you're going to these, you know, sometimes questionable venues. And granted, this was obviously like when you were trying to, you know, get your start, so to speak.
Just last week, I wrestled in front of 23 people in a high school gym that sat probably 5,000. So it's still happening, right?
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. But yeah, but you know, since you obviously you know, directed it towards that, you know, kind of walk me through, like, you know, even when just whatever a typical sort of like schedule that you kept. Obviously, when you were, not to say that you're not on the grind now, because you obviously clearly are, but just that idea of the parallels between the fact that, you know, here's a, you know, touring punk band that plays, you know, five shows in a week or whatever. So, you know, kind of walk me through like the schedule of what a touring wrestler looks like.
Yeah. And like, I don't want to come on here and saying like I'm not a huge music fan. And I know that could be like a bummer right away to a lot of people, but because the guy I originally started with and, you know, toured as a wrestler with was CM Punk, who, you know, directly from like the punk world, that was his world. It's like, I have a respect for the punk world and for like, the punk bands. And like, I understand it a little bit, you know, just from his perspective and his point of view. And I like a lot of stuff now, like based off of that and like learning about the world and not, turning my head to it. But when I was younger, right, I mean, you go and you get trained and then you try to get a booking, and then usually like your trainer will try to help you get booked, and he did originally. And then like and for the independent wrestling world, it's probably, I don't know if it's as much like the punk rock world, but you know, like Friday, Saturdays and Sundays is when we can work, because that's when shows are. Because it takes a lot, as opposed to maybe music where it's just a stage and an amplifier, and that's no way demeaning any, you know, the idea of setting up a show. But, you know, it's a 5,000-pound wrestling ring or whatever it is.
Right.
And, you know, they're lugging it across. You know, someone's got to have a, you know, it's just a lot of lugging and a lot of iron and a lot of man work that goes into putting up a show. So they usually happen just during show days. So, my formative years, developing, you know, like the first 4 years I was in college while I was wrestling, basically, I guess part time. And, you'd go anywhere. And because it's not as easy to put up a show, shows aren't happening. Like, let's say I was in college at Kalamazoo and I was in my summers, I'd be in Chicago where I'm from. Like, there's just not a show, you know, like I'm in Chicago now and you can go to any, you know, there's a comedy show and there's a rock show every single night of the week if you want to go to it, or a punk show or whatever it might be. But just there's wrestling shows don't happen that often. So you have to go find them. And we would travel, you know, and every other Wednesday we'd go to Louisville, Kentucky. I was living in Kalamazoo, and then I'd go to Milwaukee, you know, like a weekend could consist of, St. Paul on a Friday, Milwaukee on a Saturday, Dayton, Ohio on a Sunday. And you do those drives and you got to make those hours. And then you also have to work out and you also have to not eat like an asshole.
Right.
And, but like those were the weekends were like, you know, Indianapolis, Indiana, and then Pittsburgh and then Cleveland and then, you know, maybe Chicago and then Kankakee and then, you know, St. Louis. And so those were kind of, the venues you'd go to. I've played in.
Hey, you played, technically you played.
Yeah, I guess. You know, VF, you know, the big ones for us are VFW halls, armories, and high schools, I think would be like the places where we wrestle a lot. And, God, I got a lot of fun stories of like, just the idea where like I didn't know I was like this guy in a DIY or like I was a DIY guy or I was in a, you know, in a band that I didn't know about, but like I always loved. So like when I first started, I went to college. After college, I did 2 years at a school where I made, I was a teaching assistant. I made like maybe $11,000 a year before taxes. And like maybe I was making $4,000 a year during wrestling, and then like got to a point where like I hated working and I think I can make enough doing wrestling. And so like when that switch made, like I loved going to those VFW halls because that's where I would always get like you'd wrestle there, and I was kind of respected too. Like I was respected in the wrestling world, but I was poor and I was trying to attempt to live on my own. So that's where you grab your napkins and your toilet paper. And that's where you grab, you know, your utensils, like, you know, my forks and my knives. And I just remember like some of the guys still love the stories of me walking out of this one Cleveland middle school where I took a box of like over 200 rolls of toilet paper. And it's weird because I'm like the main event and they're like, Colt, what are you doing? I was like, this is great.
This is what I need.
I'm set for 3 years. If I could just take this, like I drove it, I didn't fly it. So like, if I could just put this in my trunk, I'm set for 3 years. And like, no one stopped me because like I kind of had this a little bit of prestige. So they're like, that's Colt. He's yeah, I guess he's allowed to do that.
Right. Well, I think, I mean, to your point, like the description of obviously, like you said, the venues, and even though, you know, the schedule may differ in regards to, like you said, there's clearly more production that's put into a wrestling show on any level, just because, like you said, you have a huge ring and that doesn't, you know, just show up automatically. But it's the same idea where it's like there's people who are involved on a level that is outside of what most people would pay attention to, but just the sheer love of the sport or the sheer love of music, they're going to figure it out. You know, you're going to be like, yeah, you're going to find the local high school that will be like, hey, can you rent out this gym for like $200 while we do this, you know, wrestling thing or whatever? So it's like the, you know, that to me, the parallels, like I said, are just like, it's so intertwined because above all, it's just the passion that runs through. And it's like, you know, you don't have to be doing what you're doing if you ultimately didn't care about the sport so much. I mean, first of all, let me back it up.
You don't have to call it a sport.
I was like, is that fair to call it a sport, or do most people like frown upon that?
No, I mean, I appreciate you trying to be a sweetheart by calling it a sport.
Okay.
but it's an event. It's a show. Yeah, a show.
Okay.
A show.
Got it.
Yeah. It's kind of funny you say that because that's where your brain goes. I assume that's where a musician's brain goes. It's just like, you go out to lunch and then you look at a place and you're like, ooh, can I fit a ring in here? Right. And like, that's all. And I know my comedian friends think the same thing, is like, can we put a mic in here and can like there not be sound and would it work? It's a lot harder for wrestling though, because you need like a giant building. But the number of buildings I've wrestled in with like low ceilings where you can't even stand on the top rope. And then like, it's kind of funny because you're, you know, you're sacrificing a good show for the ability to put on a show,
right?
Where, in terms of like, you know, like you're limiting the performers because they can't jump. And there's somewhere it's not even the top rope. You can't even go the second rope. But you're like, fuck it. Like, we found a place. It's cheap. Or, you know, they'll do it on the door and they'll keep concessions. So yeah, like we're going to do a show where you can't even jump off the second rope, but too fucking bad because this is the only place we can run a show, you know, and not lose all of our money. And so this is how we're going to do it.
Right. And not like I'm trying to get into, you know, the behind the curtain look in regards to like, you know, what pay is on these levels. But it's
no,
like,
feel
you know,
free.
But, you know, it's like, you know, whatever. I'll obviously draw it to bands where it's like, you know, when you're, you know, say there's a touring package of bands where it's like, you know, there's four bands on tour together. And usually the opening band is getting anywhere between, you know, $50 to $150 a night, roughly speaking, on like a semi-decent, you know, like they're playing in front of maybe 150, 200 people a night. So I imagine it's like the pay is probably you know, whatever, comparable, where it's just like, you know, you're doing these weekends worth of dates and you're getting like, you know, whatever, 50 to maybe 200 bucks a night if you are obviously a quote unquote headliner, you're the main event or whatever. But then it's just like, yeah, you're just, you know, you're getting paid commiserate off the fact that it's like, well, hopefully there's, you know, 50 people here so I can get a cut of that door. Or are you getting like guarantees? Like, how did that work?
In the beginning, it was, what's kind of funny is I had really good, you know, my trainers were kind of like established. So like they brought, like the first couple gigs I did, like I got like 50 bucks and my hotel was taken care of and our trans was taken care of. That's a thing in wrestling that I don't know if it's done in music, is that we have a thing called trans where it's like you pay for our gas, like no matter what. And that's pretty, that's been like a steady for me in my whole career for the most part, but there's some people who just give you, you know, give you a payoff. But yeah, so that first one I was like 50 bucks. And then my third match ever, I wrestled King Kong Bundy, who was a very famous wrestler in the 80s, and I got like 75 bucks. And I remember the guy who booked me for the show, I offered to give him money because I was just like, this is way too much money.
Yeah, that's so good. So
I was like, can I, you know, like, and like I think like as an Uber fan, you know, I had always read that like, you know, that there's agents and percentages. And I was just like, can I give you money? And like, hindsight's kind of funny. He was like, no. And I was like, man, like Rockin' Randy, like, is so rich, or like, he's so cool. He didn't want this like 25 bucks, which at that time, like 25 bucks would have changed my life, you know, but I got 75 bucks. So,
right.
But then after that, yeah, it went down to 20 bucks a match. And, you know, like we, like, especially those ones where we'd go to the, and we'd wrestle in this barn in, on the right outside of Louisville, Kentucky, in Clarksville, Indiana. It was like 20 bucks a match. And we'd come with a car full of guys, four from Chicago. And so they would, you know, the promoter would give that car gas money. And that's how it works. But it's, you know, I don't promote, but I'm always just like, I would never want to be a promoter, because I always think about a comedy show. There's, you know, like four comedians and maybe a band, you pay them per band. But you got to pay the wrestlers per wrestler. And sometimes, you know, if there's seven or eight matches, you know, with tag teams or whatever, there's 25 guys on a card, and then there's a ring announcer, and then there's a referee, and then there's, you know, there's just so many people and so many little, and those $20, like, they add up, you know?
Right. So, I didn't, that's a really good point. I didn't think about it from that perspective too. Cause it's like, yeah, it's not like refs are showing up for free.
Well, I mean, some are, you know, and some do. And, but like, a lot of wrestlers have tried to, like, you know, we police ourselves, and we always, you know, we try to tell these wrestlers who do come and work for free, like, hey, don't work for free. You're worth something. And it's the same way, like, a lot of wrestlers will wrestle just for the opportunity to be on a card with somebody, or for the opportunity, just the opportunity to get some ring time. And like, sadly, like, it's changed a lot. And, you know, I think a lot of people, I assume in the music, like, industry can, like, in 99, when I started independent wrestling, like, you didn't work for free. And then somewhere, like, within there, like, where I became a guy who did get, like, paid no matter what, there became a point where guys started working for free. And so, like, luckily, you know, I don't know if when I started in 99, if I would have worked for free, but I assume I would have, because I just wanted to wrestle at that point.
Yeah. Well, you don't.
Yeah.
And plus, I mean, you really, you know, you don't know better. Like, you know, it's the same, like, you know, with bands and, you know, playing venues and stuff like that. They have these things, which I'm sure in some respects there is, it's alike in the, you know, indie wrestling community, where it's like pay to play shows. So it's like you have maybe one or two bands that are well known and, you know, maybe nationally touring acts or whatever. And then you have like maybe four or five local openers that essentially have to sell, you know, 30 to 50 tickets in order for them to play the show. And then, you know, they're on the hook for those 30 to 40 tickets. So, you know, if they show up the night of the show and don't have the money for the promoter, you know, the whatever, 200 to 500 bucks or whatever, you know, they have to pay that out of pocket, you know, if they didn't sell right. those tickets and stuff. So it's the same, you know, I'm sure that there is.
Sorry to cut you off. There's a famous on the East Coast, the ticket seller battle royal got so famous that it became called the ticket seller battle royal, and whoever sold the most tickets was the winner of the battle royal.
Oh my God. I mean, it totally makes sense, especially in the context of wrestling, where it's just like, hey, you have the ability to control the outcome, like
right.
before the match starts. So bring the tickets.
And like, that's where you kind of like not weed out the suckers, but you're like, oh, this poor guy just wants to be a winner in front of his friends and family, you know, like, because there's an art to it. And like, there is like a dissection, or, and I'm sure it's the same music, but like, of like, there's guys who just want to learn and just want to get good and don't care. And then those guys like who originally start and they're like, I want to win. Like, I'm not coming if I don't win.
Right.
And like, that's not what it's about. I'd imagine it'd be like, I don't know, like somebody on one of those ticket sellers, like they want to be in the sweet spot, or they want to be like at 8 o'clock when everyone is there, or right. something.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Oh no, you're totally right. And so, you know, kind of backing up, like, just because I feel like obviously the pursuit of what you did with wrestling is very similar to the same idea that like when bands get to that point in their life where it's like they either choose one of two paths, whether they're like, oh, well, I'm still going to do this band, even though, you know, I'm broke, like I just have a job to fill me in on between tours and whatever, you know, versus like, obviously, like, you know, going to school or doing, you know, finding a career or whatever. You obviously graduated college and like, it seemed like you were practical from that perspective. But, you know, I'm sure when it came down to it, the decision to, you know, do independent wrestling was probably met with a bunch of quizzical looks from your friends and family in certain respects.
Well, like, it was weird because I had that buffer of college. And like, you know, I told my parents I didn't want to go to college. I wanted to just do wrestling. And they're like, no, you had to go to college. And like, you know, like gratefully enough, you know, my parents paid for college. And so like that was a luxury that I had. And it's kind of, you know, I'm very self-made after that, if you will. Like I hate depending on anybody. So I had that like that 4-year buffer, if you will. And I thought just like, oh, I'll do this. And then after college, I'll just go right to WWF, you know, like that's how it'll work. I'll have 4 years of of all this experience. And then once college finished, I was like, oh, that's so far away, if at all. But I was starting. And so I graduated in 2001 or 2002. And I was making a little bit of money. And that's like kind of the same thing where, you know, that I said like, okay, well, I'll get a job. There's a wrestler named Tracy Smothers who always says he has a job to support his wrestling habit. And it's the best quote. He says it all the time. Tracy's a little crazy. He's like in his mid-50s now, and he delivers pizza to support his wrestling habit. Like, he's still doing it.
I love it.
And yeah, he's the best. And so my parents, you know, I had this business degree, and I could go down. They want like Walgreens corporate was like right around my house growing up, and they kept on pushing me there, or my mom did, you know, and like I could have went and got a real job, but you know, I wanted to find a job that I could wrestle, that I could have weekends off, and so the teaching assistant gig was perfect. It gave me health insurance. I had Saturdays and Sundays off, and Fridays I'd get out by 3, and I had X amount, you know, I had like 18 sick days or whatever it was, or, you know, or whatever, or 12 sick days and 6 personal days. And you better believe I used every single one of them, to, you know, to go wrestling. And so, by the time I did that, you know, I was 23 and I was making, I thought enough that I could stop that and I could wrestle. And so, I was kind of like in wrestling, I was kind of high profile on the independent scene. So like my friends, you know, they saw that I would travel to Pittsburgh, or I would get flown. You know, at that point I was even getting flown to London to wrestle on the show. You know, I didn't make a lot of money, but the idea that people were flying me internationally. Everyone was just kind of like, if you can do this, like go for it. And I kind of had like, I just kind of had the idea of like, oh, I told myself like when I was 30, and if I had it, quote unquote, made it, I'll go back to like teaching school and get a teaching degree or whatever. So I kind of gave myself this pretty long time frame. And like looking at it now at 36, like I thought that was like going to be like, that's in like a million years. Right. So, totally. You know?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'm going to be this old fucking 30-year-old going back to college.
Right, right.
So, you know, I stopped teaching, and right, I think it was, I needed to make $150 every week. That's kind of how I looked at it. And usually I do two to three shows a week. So I kind of like, if I can get $100, or I'm sorry, I need to do 8 shows and I need to make $150 each show. So I try to make $100 to wrestle, and I try to do $50 in merchandise. And, you know, if I couldn't get 100, it'd be 75 and 75. And like, I remember, selling, we would sell VHS tapes, and I would print out You know, I'd hook up at Kinko's, I think it was, right? Oh. Like everyone probably does.
Dude, it's so funny. Like I'm sure we could talk for, 2 hours and you can, tell me these stories and you can name the same things that I was just like, oh yeah, hook up at Kinko's. Of course. You went at midnight and printed off all your stuff. Like, same thing as like, oh, we had our demo tape and we needed cover. So where do we go? A friend at Kinko's hooked us up. But anyways, continue.
Oh yeah. I had a hook up at Blockbuster.
Oh, nice.
And he would give me because they would throw out the empty VHS shells.
Right, right.
The hard ones. So like, yeah, so you just, and then, I used my parents' Costco card, to get like VHS tapes were like, I think like 12 for $8 or something like that,
Right.
And so that's how I was churning out Best of Colt Cabana volume 1 through 3. And, I don't know, like I just sold a lot of stuff. I remember I used to sell the Macho Man. I used to sell the Macho Man CD, a bootleg version of the Macho Man CD. He had a rap album.
Right. I told you. Yeah, of course I remember that.
Yeah. And I would sell the China, porn. She did a porn.
Dude, that's so good. You were just like this. You were this, I'm going to compare it to shows where it's like you would have people like you'd have obviously the band selling merch. But then usually there's, it's more rare now. But you would have these like distro tables where it's like, they had a bunch of CDs or vinyl from, a variety of different bands. So it's essentially like a mini shopping mall for kids to go up to. So like you were this walking, traveling, distro of like, oh, hey, here's my stuff. But then I also got all this other stuff.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was a garage sale. And so I treated it as a garage sale. And what's great was like sometimes those people would be charged for tables because I'm a wrestler and I was kind of highly respected. Like I just got the table. And like the thing that literally that I was able to survive with and then I ended up making a lot of my money on was I would go down and I would wrestle in Tijuana for like $50 or whatever it was. And I would buy these masks off the streets. And at this time, like, it was very hard to like get this. And there wasn't a lot of like vendors at the show. So I would buy these cheap wrestling masks for $2 each. And I'd sell them for 10 to 15 bucks at the show. And they would fly, man. Cause like kids, everyone would want to buy them. So I was literally like, I was a wrestler, but like, to be honest, I was a mask salesman.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, this person that maybe, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
LASIK LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Sorry for this break in the action, because I know you're excited about hearing more about Colt's story, but let me talk to you about something important. And that important thing is food, right? So some of us are so incredibly busy. Actually, some of us, how about all of us, are so incredibly busy that we don't have the time to eat good food, you know? Like, we just, we settle for whatever's in front of us. And you got to find the time to do it, right? You got to go to the grocery store. You got to figure out the portions. It all adds up. And then it just makes your head hurt. And you're just like, I don't know. Let me just have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich again. Let me tell you about the savior that will be your favorite company. It's called Sunbasket. So Sunbasket, what they do is they deliver delicious, healthy recipes and fresh ingredients right to your doorstep. You can prepare each meal in just 30 minutes or less, and it's healthy cooking made super, super easy. You'll get organic, non-GMO ingredients from the best farms, and everything is seasonal and sustainably sourced. I was going to trip over that because, like, sis. Anyways, but they offer paleo, gluten-free, vegetarian options, and it's created by award-winning chef, and it's approved by nutritionists, so you know you're going to get the best stuff that's going into your body. And each meal comes with a pre-measured fresh ingredient and easy to follow instructions, directions, whatever you like to call it. But basically, it comes with a beautiful card, walks you through it. I've done this with my wife. It's super fun and it's delicious. Every meal that I've tried from them has been just unbelievable. Like chilaquiles. Have you ever had a chilaquile? Yeah, well, I hadn't up until they sent it to me, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is unbelievable. So please go to sunbasket.com/words today, and you'll get your first three meals for free. That's sunbasket.com/words to get three healthy, easy to prepare meals for free. Sunbasket.com/words. Like, seriously, I've taken you out to dinner. Just take me up on the offer, okay? Sunbasket, amazing stuff, and it'll make your life better. Now, here is my discussion with Colt.
Well, and so, something that I was going to bring up a little bit later, but I think is apropos, is the, you know, you obviously are a very gregarious and friendly person. And like anybody that pays attention to you, either obviously from wrestling or your podcast, you know, can kind of glean that pretty quickly. And so obviously that seems like that has always been who you are as a person. Like, were you always kind of like, you know, looking to be, and not in a bad way, but like the center of attention, like, you know, sort of the goofball in class, or like, were you more kind of reserved? And then obviously wrestling kind of, you know, pulled this other side of you.
Oh, wrestling definitely took, like, brought a lot out of me. I mean, I was a goofball in class, and I was, I guess I'd say, outgoing. And like, I had this great crew of friends in high school that I'm still friends with. And we were just, I mean, God, I don't even know what we were. Like, we were just, we weren't outcasts because, like, I mean, I guess we went to parties and stuff, but we were just always, like, known as, like, this weird outcast group that could get along with everyone, but we were always just doing weird stuff. And it was, like, we were always based, like, we were always just, I don't know, we were a bunch of weirdos, but, like, we weren't. So, but we were always making fun of each other, and we were always laughing. I guess everyone kind of has this crew, but, and I thought, you know, that kind of formed me a lot to who I was. But when I got in wrestling, yeah, like I saw my trainers, and I saw like the idea of just my trainers, Ace Steel and Danny Dominion. They were both real big goofballs, and I don't know if wrestling had brought that out of them or if they just were in general. But just being around those guys in my formative years really, really, like, you know, because I went to wrestling school and I was very, like, I was very shy, not shy, but, like, you know, like, I wanted this so bad. So I wasn't going to be an asshole. I wasn't going to be a goof off. I had, my mouth was shut. My ears were open. I was just ready to learn. I wanted to learn everything, and I was going to be a fly on the wall, but they were like, no, this is a place where we can just be total fucking idiots. So once that was allowed and encouraged, like, it's kind of like they were teaching me about wrestling, and they said, like, hey, part of wrestling is being a fucking idiot and just being a goofball. And so, like, I was like, yep, well, all I want to be is a wrestler, so I guess I have to be that. And that brought a lot out of me.
Right. That's cool. Well, I like that, because then it's like it gives you the ability and license to, you know, be essentially obviously what you are, which is an entertainer. Because, like, I know many people, you know, view wrestling as obviously this. I mean,
it's not as maligned as it once was, where it's like, you know, whatever. I mean, if just from my outside observation, that it's like, you know, whatever, in the, you know, mid to late 2000s, where a lot of people were just kind of like, oh yeah, it's that weird stuff that I was into as a kid. But it's like, you know, at the end of the day, it's like the wrestlers of any level are entertainers.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. We're showmen. I'm a personality.
Right. And did you find like you had to kind of like, obviously learn how to be that and kind of embody this like larger than life person?
Yeah. I'll tell kids, like, I'll do seminars and stuff, and I'll tell people like, yeah, you got it when you order, when you go to order food, like you kind of got to do a little promo, and you got to like, you got to fuck with people and you got to be a bullshitter.
Right.
And so like, and that's kind of where that con aspect comes in a little bit, because you're like, you're putting on this fake, you know, shtick to be able to like get into this character that you are. And like, I felt myself doing a lot of that, but I was having fun with it. But like at the end of the day, I knew that's not, you know, going back to my parents, that person isn't who I was. But I feel after doing that long enough, you know, it formed a personality. But yeah, you know, a lot of like, of just fucking around with people, I think.
Right.
Which is sad because, you know, I look back and it's like, God, I probably treated a lot of people like shit. And like, I never hurt anybody, but I was playing a character in real life. Like the whole world was my wrestling vignette, if you will.
Right.
And
people didn't know that.
People had no clue. Right. No clue.
Right. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So then obviously, like, you know, as you were kind of progressing, like you were mentioning earlier in regards to the fact that you were getting flown over to London and stuff like that, when did you kind of like notice yourself that you were getting some momentum within, you know, the scene that you were a part of? And like, did it feel like, did you recognize it, or was it just one of those things you only recognized it retroactively?
I think London was one, because I remember somebody called me up and they're just like, and this is why I attribute like my whole career to the internet, but somebody got my number, a promoter in London. I know it was a big deal at that point. And they were just like, a lot of people have been requesting you and Punk because they've seen these VHS tapes from a promotion called IWA Mid-South. And that's the one that we did in the barn right outside of Louisville. And that was the first time where like I put it together where I was like, this is so crazy that our stuff is getting out there. And the only way, it's not like there was TV out there. And so, yeah, it was through VHS, but the only way that these people could say, hey, check out this VHS tape is through people talking on the internet, you know? And so, and then there was a promotion that I still wrestle for to this day called Ring of Honor that started up, that like kind of, they were the first one, like, you know, we did a lot of like regional stuff. Like we'd wrestle and, you know, in before WWF took over and became national, wrestling was territorial, so everyone had their own territory. Like there was a promotion in Minneapolis, you know, Wisconsin territory. There was a promotion in Vegas, promotion in, you know, San Francisco, a territory in LA, and like you didn't tread on any of those. Like those were the guys making money, and then everyone was, you know, TV wasn't national, and then with cable and Vince McMahon, he kind of took it all over. So with the indies, that's kind of how it works too. And there's a promotion called Ring of Honor, and they would only use the top guys from the top non-contracted guys from everywhere. And, you know, very early on, Punk and I were asked to do that. And so that was kind of like, oh, we're the Midwest guys. We're the guys who have been traveling. And that's all due to like traveling. We just traveled our ass off. And like, you know, it's the same way, like I'm sure there were zines and stuff. Like, you know, there was newsletters of like results. And also there was a magazine called the Pro Wrestling Illustrated that was actually in newsstands at that point. And like you would see results, and like my goal and a lot of our goal, and some of the guys' goals was like, I want people to read it and be like, wait, Colt Cabana was in Pittsburgh, but wait, Colt Cabana was in Ohio, and then Colt Cabana was in, you know, like Minneapolis, like for them, for their minds to be blown. And I think like as a fan, like I'd always be like, you know, if someone was like all over the place, you'd be like, oh, that guy's a star. He's going all over the place. And so like it was, you know, like I meant to do that. And like it kind of, I didn't know if it would work, but like that was the plan. And then slowly but surely, like it kind of worked.
Right, right. No, I like that trajectory where it's like, you know, you had, whether or not it was like a real plan, you're like, no, I think this makes sense. Like, you know, you had this theoretical goal of like obviously being everywhere at all at once. And then you're like, oh, that paid off unintentionally.
Yeah, I always do like, I only do stuff that I would like as a fan. or that like makes sense to me as a person. And so like, right, my podcast is just because like I didn't do it like with a plan, but I always thought that that's what, like if I was a wrestling fan, like that's what I would want to listen to. And like the comedy stuff that I do in the ring, like that's because like if I was a fan, like I'd probably be bored with this just like regular stupid wrestling stuff. Like I want to be entertained.
Right.
And so like that's why I do it. And so as a wrestler, I was like, well, I don't want to just stick in one place. Like it just seems like that's what like a scrub would do. Like I think like if I was a fan and I was following someone's career, like I would be all about somebody who would just go all over the place. And it's easier to be a fan and notice someone, and it's a lot harder
to execute it right on your end.
Yeah, to get in that car and to do those miles.
Right.
But I thought that's how you did it.
Right. I like how I really like the saying of put in those miles, because that's I mean honestly that's not something that like you know like that is part of the vernacular within the you know music industry or whatever. It's like you know usually it's just like you know hit the road, go on the road or whatever. But put those miles is the exact same thing. I just love it.
Yeah, you could take it.
Yeah, cool.
Feel free to use it.
Sounds good.
Also, feel free to sell bootleg China porn at your table.
I love it. Yeah. I think the internet may have decimated that market.
Yeah, we call it the gimmick table. What did you do? Do you guys when you have the merch?
It's like we call it maybe like a distro table, where it's like it's a local person that like maybe just has you know they're like doing wholesale and CDs and stuff like that. And so, so yeah, I don't know. It's just funny distro, but, you know, obviously most people know wrestling via, you know, the WWF and WWE. But it's one of those things where, I presume most people that obviously are super involved in wrestling, you know, view the WWF or WWE, sorry, cause I'll always call it as such.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Go for it.
Where people look at that as like obviously the pinnacle of success, but at the same time it's like I'd probably equate it to the same way that bands look at major labels, where it's like, oh yeah, if I'm on like Capitol or Atlantic, like you know, like yeah, that's cool, but then like I want to be like in the real shit, you know, like I want to be on the, you know, whatever. I want to be successful on my own terms and not sell out to the man. Like I'm sure there's a lot of kind of push and pull between like obviously the, you know, WWE and then not only everything as it stands now, but like, you know, once independent wrestling started to become more of a thing.
Yeah. The sad thing is that I don't think anyone ever has been like, I want to do it on the, like, I just want to be an independent wrestler. Like it was always, everyone just goes for that. Cause that's what we just all grew up on. And maybe it's starting to change a little bit. And like, I know that's kind of been my mantra, but that was my mantra after I got fired by the WWE and I realized I didn't like it there. And you know what I'm saying? So, and not everyone, and I feel it's kind of the same. Like a lot of people are offering, especially now, like people are offering up these WWE contracts to a lot of guys because, you know, quote unquote, indie wrestling has kind of become popular. And, you know, it's Ramon's shirts and Hot Topic kind of shit, you know, or whatever it is. You know, like they have this new promotion NXT where like they're essentially took the independent model and just put it on, you know, on their network. So, in that way, like, I don't know if it's the same, but I always say it's like a SNL for comedy, if you will.
Oh, like, sure. Right. It's like, yeah, I mean, I could see where it's just like that. I mean, especially when you do come up, you know, through an independent market where it's like, you know, because obviously whatever you could look at, you know, just like a pop band or whatever, that their only goal is to be like the biggest thing ever and be like commercially successful. They're going to, you know, they're not interested in, you know, grinding it out. And I mean, they're interested in working hard in some respects, but not in the sense of like, you know, getting on the road or whatever and doing all that. But I'm sure it's like, you know, the same way where it's like people who are in independent comedy, like, yeah, they would eventually obviously like to be on Saturday Night Live, but they're like, you know, I got to put in the time. I got to get the chops. I got to, you know, be competent before I throw myself into that stage.
And the way I always sell it is like, listen, there's, cause there's people who are like, well, if you're not in the WWE, you're not a real wrestler, you know, and that's sadly like, and in the media too, it's like, you know, these guys, all, of course, they get all the notoriety and the fame or whatnot, and deservedly so to an extent. But it's just like, I'm always just like, you know, to fans who come at me hard, it's just like, well, you know, these guys on SNL, like people not doing SNL, like, would you not consider that comedy? Would you not consider, you know like, and that's why, like, I'm such an, you know, I'm such an alt comedy fan. And It only goes because of my appreciation for what I do and the realization of like, oh, like that's they're, you know, they, those guys are going through the same thing and they found their own way and they found their own niche. And the same thing, of course, goes for punk music. But like, I'm more, you know, I more realize and recognize it because of my fandom for comedy is that like the parallels to it. And, it's just, and I think it's the internet. And so like a big thing that I've always said, like is that growing up, like you wanted to be a TV wrestler. Like that was the goal, to be a TV wrestler. And the only way to do it really was WWF or WWE. And you got in wrestling school and like, everyone was like, how do I get on TV? Like, that's how I become a star. That's how I make money. How do I get on TV? And that's always the question. Like, and some people would even like, you know, when I got signed to the WWE, I took a pay cut because I was like, that's how I'm going to get on TV. And this was back in 2007. And I think it's changing to where it's like, now it's not, people are going to come up and they're not going to say, how do I get on TV? They're going to say, how do I get on the internet? And I don't want to be a TV wrestler. Like I want to be an internet wrestler. And I think that's, and the internet is to everyone. Like WWE has a lock on television, but they don't have, you know, nobody has a lock on the internet. And so that's kind of where like that can become a way where we could become independent. We could become independent wrestlers. We could sell our own stuff online and we can, you know, we can have our own YouTube channels and Twitter lines or whatever it is. And we have the same amount of communication as the WWE does or, you know, or whoever else is on television, which, you know, there's a couple guys on television, but they don't have the same. It's just like, you know, WWE is Disney. Like they have.
Totally.
They're an institution.
Yep. Yeah, no, for sure.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
So when you, you know, kind of reflecting on your obviously experience with the WWE, like you said, you know, you took a pay cut because obviously you're just like, well, this is obviously what I need to do in order to get myself to a wider audience, whatever. You know, honestly, in the same, you know, the same way that bands obviously feel like they need a larger stage to go on because, oh, if I sign to a major label, I'll get radio promo and whatever, all the other things that you are, you know, essentially promised. I know you've obviously publicly spoken about a lot of things with the WWE and, you know, pros and cons within that. But, you know, did you, I guess, do you reflect on that experience as being like, oh, that was like ultimately good for me that I went through that, even though it may have been crappy at the time or whatever? Or do you kind of.
Yeah, it was great for me. I mean, I wouldn't have what I have now. Which is unbelievable freedom and success. Like, and it's like it's that storyline. And I tell people all the time, but like you got to go down in order to go up. So you know, I needed that dip. Like, I needed that failure and almost public failure because like when I got signed, like everyone was like, yeah, this is a no brainer. Colton Entertainer, you know, he's you know, whatever. He's odd, easily enough to be able to at least make some kind of dent on their television show. And like, I had five matches and I lost all of them with under 2 minutes, and I had two battle royals and I was thrown out at first. And I was like known as the worst WWE wrestler of all time. There was even a thing on Reddit where somebody did the analytics of it, and I am the worst wrestler of all time.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah.
Like the most matches and loss ratio, like I was like 0-7 or something like that, you know. And at least, like, at least some people got a win, or they got fired after a couple matches, or, you know, like they lost like one or two and they're like, ah, let's get rid of this guy. But like, I had a good handful of matches where I was just losing them all.
Right. They're like, let's keep this guy around. He's clearly the one that we can throw out first or pin the quickest.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, so it just gave me like a real, you know, I had a trajectory. I had a line, like, you know, I had a through line, and like, luckily comedy was there for me, because there's guys that this has happened to before, and they get, and the community, the wrestling community, like, they make fun of them hard, and they kind of ostracize them from wrestling. There's a couple of guys that this happened to, and they've basically been thrown out of wrestling. But I came to it really fast with comedy, and I made fun of myself before anyone else could. And like, it was depressing, don't get me wrong, but I was able to take myself out of the situation and realize like how crazy and almost funny it was, like sad but funny. And so I hit it hard, and I made fun of my Scotty Goldman name and that they gave me, and I hit the Jewish jokes hard, and I told everyone how awful I was, you know, and like,
right.
And that was like, luckily I was able to combat that. And luckily then, like, you know, I was able to find a platform and people that like appreciated that and became my fans up because of it. And then like watched my wrestling or listened to what I had to say and was like, this guy's talented. And like, that's slowly but surely how I collected those baseball cards. And then, you know, and got real, real true fans, as opposed to like, you know, quote unquote marks or these guys that I was conning into liking me so they, you know, to buy a ticket, but like people that really wanted to support me. And I think like that was like, and I'm not saying like I was the first with this, but like I really understood that I needed supporters and not just like marks, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I think that's what that comes from, the same idea of music and punk rock, is I need people who support me, who are really, really rooting for me. And I was so low in my career, is like, I needed these people to root for me and to tell their friends. And I think that's how like this second half of my career, and like the career that saved me, like came around, is because of that punk rock idea, that DIY idea that I was never, and I think I told you, it's like, I started with CM Punk in wrestling, who is known as the punk rock kid. And I was like just a Jewish kid from the suburbs, from a night, you know, from like a middle to upper class house or wherever it might be. And like, it's so weird that like we totally switched. Like, he became the corporate dude and I became this, this punk rock, you know, pro wrestler.
Yeah, no, that's really, really cool. I like that, that mentality that you can approach it like that. And then
luckily,
it's true. Yeah.
I'm not bragging that like, oh, I have an open mind, but like, that I you know, because it's been beaten in me for so long that like, these are the fans, we don't really respect them. And luckily, like I was able to see it in a different way.
Oh, for sure. And so like, obviously, like you mentioned, you know, the fact that, you were able to, you know, cause a lot of people, obviously, you know, many people have watched the movie, The Wrestler, and, mm-hmm. You know, noticed the context where it's like, you know, there is a very, not a self-fulfilling prophecy, but a lot of people do notice the fact that it's like, oh, this is a tough gig to obviously sustain yourself and hold interest and everything else. Like, especially when you've been kind of, you know, you've been in the indie circuit, you've tried, you know, WWE, and then it didn't work out for one reason or another. And so, you know, you obviously have transitioned into, you know, multiple, like we were talking about earlier, you're an entertainer at this point, where it's like, obviously, yes, you're known as a wrestler and you do that as your primary thing. But like, you know, whatever, you obviously are a podcast host and you live in the podcast community. So it's like, now you live in all these weird worlds and subcultures where it's like, yeah, you're a part of the independent comedy community in some respects as well, because obviously you were just over in, you know, Edinburgh for 6 weeks or whatever. Is it fun for you to obviously be able to, I guess, you know, spread your wings and do all these different things?
Yeah, you know, well, so I had all my eggs in the WWE basket. You know, I doubled down. I left my home. I moved to where they wanted me to move. I you know, I I let go of the ColtCabana.com domain. You know, I was all in on whatever they wanted me to do. And like, I had no control of it. And, you know, when they fired me, I was just like it was like starting over. And I realized that, like, I could never let that happen to me again, where I didn't have control of like whether I was getting fired or not, you know, and B, like, I only had one basket. So the idea was like, I needed like six or seven baskets of avenues or ventures or whatever it might be, that like, if one thing goes wrong, then I'm able, you know, like, then life's not over and I don't have to start over again. Then I could just jump into other things. And that's kind of like, right, I, you know, and that's not the reason like I started a podcast. Like, obviously, I found avenues and ventures and baskets of things that I love doing. I love being a part of it. So it's all based around wrestling because that's what I know the most. But yeah, you know, like, I started doing these documentary series. I started doing a YouTube show. I started getting into independent comedy. I started touring a comedy wrestling show. I started doing some stand up. I'd open for Mick Foley doing wrestling comedy. I started the podcast. I was still wrestling. I refused. A lot of people offered me contracts for their wrestling companies, and I refused, and I still refuse to this day. Like, I don't want to be a contracted wrestler. Like, I don't think that you can, you know, like, these guys are offering contracts for less than a janitor makes, and I'm not harping on a janitor, but I'm just saying, like, if you look in the context of it, it's just ridiculous that you know, they want us to kill ourselves, and then they want us to put, you know, they want us to, like, write down for these contracts that just are shit money. So, yeah, so, like,
sorry to interrupt, but I want to make sure I understand in context, because I mean, I'm presuming the fact, like, when you get presented a contract from, you know, said promotion company, organization, whatever, you are obviously only allowed to wrestle at their events, and kind of you are at their beck and call, so to speak, where it's like, you're
right.
Okay. And so basically, you know, that can mean anywhere between whatever, you know, 30 to 100 matches within a year. You have no idea, but you're locked in at a salary because obviously, you know, they want to, you know, get you for a prolonged period of time.
Or they'll, you know, there's some companies that are like, well, you know, this doesn't mean anything. You know, we just want to make sure. But it's just like, they, at any time, they can change their mind. And I don't want that to be able to happen to me. And right. And some companies do it, like, are doing it where you can only wrestle, right, 30 shows or whatever. And I love, like, this week, right, I did a show for, it was like 1,100 people in Pittsburgh. And then, like I said, that was on Friday. And then on Sunday, I wrestled in front of 23. And like, each were both amazing for different reasons.
Right.
But at this point in my career, like, I love the idea of doing those shows for nobody, or, you know, like, I got just as many stories out of it as I did the, you know, I probably got more stories out of the Sunday show than I did out of the Friday show. And that's kind of like, at a point, like, what I'm doing it for, like, these memories, like, the idea of this crazy life that I'm living, I still wanted to do it. And I still, like, I also want to be like, this is what independent wrestlers do. We eat shit. And so, I mean, it's nice that, like, I've been able to, you know, make a couple of bucks where it's like, I'm not dying now, but I still, like, I live the life, like, I want to live that life.
Yeah, well, I think it's really interesting because I do think that, I mean, again, the parallels between that and music, where it's like, ultimately, people that feel, you know, because everybody uses the, you know, one band as like the bastion of success within independent music. And that's like, you know, Fugazi. Everyone always obviously looks at a band like Fugazi, who's from Washington, D.C. And like, you know, they played $5 shows, were extremely successful. They had no merch. Like, you know, they basically throw out all the rule books in regards to, you know, independent music and touring and stuff like that. And so, you know, every band, of course, likes to model themselves after that, but then they quickly realize, like, oh, there's only one band that could, you know, do that. But the independent mindedness of what you're talking about, where ultimately people want to be in control in whatever respect of their own destiny, you know, and like, when you sign off on a contract and you kind of give that freedom over to somebody else, that's when you feel like, oh, I can't do this because you're telling me I can't do this.
Mm. And they have the right. They have the right to take it from you at any time.
Yeah.
Even though they're like, no, like, we're cool, and it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, you're like, but I want to be able to make the decisions for myself. I don't want you. Yeah. I want someone else making the decisions.
Yeah.
And the last thing I want to hit on was the fact that the you know, the idea that obviously once a person kind of attaches themselves to a subculture and does it, you know, because realistically, wrestling is something that you're supposed to be in for a determined amount of time, especially when you are a fan. You know, it's like, you're supposed to like it as a kid, and then maybe as you grow up and have, you know, sons or daughters, like, you know, maybe you'll get into it then. But like, you know, you're pot committed to this. you know, what obviously still keeps your, I guess, fire going from that perspective? The fact that you do have control over your own destiny, or is it just the fact that, like you said, you're using this as a way to collect, you know, stories and collect memories in your backpack, so to speak?
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I always say that, like, I was obsessed with professional wrestling as a kid. And as, you know, as we got 12 and 13, people start, you know, the guys that liked wrestling, then they started liking girls. And for some reason, you know, I was still obsessed with wrestling and everyone kind of went away from it. And then all of a sudden it was my, like, I was the only one at my school. Like, I still had my friends, but nobody liked wrestling. And so no one wanted to talk wrestling and no one wanted to be obsessed about it as much as I was. And so, like, obviously that's, you know, why I liked it, you know, from 13 to 18. And then I got into it. And then when I started training, like, you start appreciating it for a whole different reason when you become a performer as opposed to a fan. And now, like, you know, honestly, you know, I don't watch the WWE as much, if at all, especially since I'm in a lawsuit where they're coming after me. That's the main reason.
Right.
But, you know, you know, sometimes I ask myself, like, man, am I a fan? You know, like, is it just because I'm, this is my livelihood and I've been doing this, you know, I think I've been almost now wrestling, you know, more years than I haven't been wrestling in my life. And so, you know, I don't know if, like, if I'm only doing this cause it's my job. But, like, I, you know, when I'm out there performing, like, I feel alive. I still love it. It's so much fun. And, you know, maybe there is something else out there, but, like, I found this, and, like, I think as I'm, like, diving in, and I think I totally forgot, I think I'm heading on the right direction of what you're talking about, right?
No, you totally are. You're good.
Yeah. I think I might have forgot what I was talking about, but...
That's fine.
But, yeah, like, you know, like, I do love comedy, and I, you know, when I was in Edinburgh, we did a show, you know, every single night for 25 straight nights where we would watch bad wrestling. And we would improv over it. Not improv. We would kind of do the commentary. And me and a comedian, Brendan Burns, and I do the same with a comedian named Marty DeRosa here in the States. But when I'm over in Edinburgh, I do it with Brendan Burns, and we have a guest every night. And, like, I don't know. I just lived for the idea. Like, I still got the same satisfaction that I did in the ring. So I think it's the idea that it's this performance that I really love doing, and I like performing, and I like making jokes. Like, I think I like having people laugh, and I found, like, I'm best at it in a wrestling ring because I'm pretty skilled at the wrestling part. So, like, that's where I'm best to, you know, to make people laugh. And so as long as I can kind of do that, and then once I can't wrestle, I'll still be able to be in the wrestling world making people laugh, you know, through the podcast and all that stuff. And I think, like, just wrestling is the genre that's allowed me to be the most comfortable, probably because it was the one thing I was super obsessed with the most as a kid. I think it all kind of has to do, like, right, we kind of form ourselves and who we are, like, in those younger years. And I think it was just so wrestling heavy for some reason that's what stuck.
Yeah, well, I mean, I like that because ultimately it's a matter of obsession. Like, this, the same thing can be said, obviously, about music, about anything that is obviously bubbling beneath the surface of what people define as mainstream. And I think ultimately that's the only thing that will guide people, you know, that get into this. It's like, you just have to, regardless of whether or not, you know, you decide to do this as for a living or whatever, like, as long as you have that undercurrent of, like, I'm obsessed with this thing. Like, you know, the same way that, like you said, you were obviously paying attention to, you know, every single wrestler and every single, you know, mover and shaker within that community. The same thing could be said, obviously, people paying attention to record labels and being like, oh, I'm going to listen to the new band on this record label because I love it. That should be your guiding light, you know? And I think that's what shines through in what you do. And all you're doing now is just an evolution of that passion, you know? You can just take it in different directions.
Oh man, like when ESPN started playing global wrestling after school, you know, it was just like, and it was like, and I think I knew that's when, like, it didn't matter about WWE. And, like, maybe that's what forms me as an independent wrestler, because, like, Windy City Pro Wrestling was on at 6 a.m. on channel 62. And, like, I'd set my VHS for it. It's just like any wrestling, like, fuck. And, like, I think, like, even the weirder the wrestling was, like, the cooler it was, you know?
Right. And
what was that like for on television for punk or hardcore? Was like, what was like what seeped through?
Well, I think a lot of people, especially that are like around our age, what's like, yeah, when, you know, MTV was doing that video program called 120 Minutes. You know, that was basically like a late night video show from like 11 at night to like 1 in the morning. And they were showing stuff that they couldn't play during, you know, mainstream. So it was like, you know, they're playing whatever, some, you know, punk bands like whatever, NoFX and Lagwagon and all that stuff. But then they were playing like Rage Against the Machine. And, you know, when the whole grunge scene was exploding, they were playing bands that were, you know, weren't Pearl Jam and Alice in Chains on there. So I think
that was how everyone like found their, and then you like, okay, like I got 3 minutes of it. Now I got to like find everything about this guy, right? Or these.
Totally. Or it's like, yeah. Or in, honestly, in a very similar fashion to your VHS tapes of like the best of Colt Cabana, a lot of people really identified with like compilations. So it's like, you know, you get a really low price CD for like $4 or $5 that you'd buy at a record store that had, you know, 20 songs on it. And that would be kind of, like you said, your gateway, where it's like you get a little taste where it's like, oh, this band is cool. Like, I need to know more about them. So it's like, yeah, same thing where it's just like, and like you said, with the global wrestling, where like the weirder, the better. It's like sometimes that's what you found yourself listening to, where it's like, oh man, the heavier the better. Like, yeah, the more out there, like I want to know more about this. I don't know why, but I want to know more.
Right. Yeah, tape trading was a big thing in wrestling. Like, that was a big community, was tape trading. So like everyone would get 12 tapes and then everyone would dub them, and then you send them out to the 11 people, and then all of a sudden, you know, for like, you bought one, but then for, you know, for the price of one and shipping, then you all of a sudden you got all like 12 like crazy different wrestling things from different places.
Right.
And
people would be recording those from like their local broadcasts or whatever. And like, there's no way that you would be able to get that anywhere else besides those tape trades.
Yeah. Or, you know, or Japan, you know, people would find it from Japan or like, or different countries. Right. So like, yeah, there's no way you could get them. And the television, right? Like Florida TV or whatever it might have been. So
I just love it too, because obviously since wrestling is so theatrical, and obviously this was pre-internet, you would just be, the only thing you could rely on is the images right in front of you. And you would look at this dude who's like larger than life, and you'd be like, I need to know more about this Japanese wrestler I've never heard of before.
Well, yeah. And you know, PWI magazine, like, not to go back to that, but like, those were right. Like, that's the only way we would know about these independent wrestlers, was sometimes they would give like, probably just, you know, they would give a page or two pages. And there's a guy named Reckless Youth who was like the king of the independents in 1997. He wasn't on television, but like, he was based out of the Northeast. That's when the magazines were based out of the Northeast. And like, they made him out to be like a god. And like, I, you know, at one point I had never seen his matches, but he was my favorite wrestler, you know, just cause it was like this guy that somehow, you know, like on the same magazine as Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, you know, Ric Flair, was Reckless Youth. And like, for some reason, like, I was blown away by it. And I just thought he was the coolest fucking guy. And I had never seen his matches, but just like the idea that he was just this outcast. And like, it's just another, and like, you know, I had Reckless on my podcast, and like, and you, it's kind of a theme on my podcast, is just like these guys that I'm like, was always in awe about, that I read in PWI magazine, that I never knew or I never saw any of their matches, but like, they just had my respect because they weren't on television, yet they were getting that, they like, they obviously had to have been good enough that someone was like putting them on. And it was also like almost like, hey, like, if you like, you'll only be able to see this guy like if you try really, really hard. And there's something about that always resonated with me, is like, you can't just turn on USA Network at 8 o'clock. Like, you have to try hard to see this guy. And like, in my head, I was like, that's like, oh, like I'll be a huge fan. Like, you know, all these other guys aren't trying hard, but I'm a huge fan, so I'll try hard and it'll show my fandom almost.
I totally love that. It gives me goosebumps, because it's like you and I were having the same experiences, obviously with two different cultures, but it's like, that's, to me, that just shows the, you know, why these two communities are so important, and obviously why there's like such crossover, because it's like, at the end of the day, we're the weird kids in the corner as far as like, you know, what are you into? You should be more into this thing or whatever. And it's like, no, I like this, you know, I like going into, essentially we're going into dark rooms with a bunch of sweaty dudes. That's kind of what we're both doing.
like-minded people. And like, I don't know about you, but like, everyone from my high school, they all became like doctors, lawyers, and real estate. And I'm the fucking, for some reason, like, I'm the weird wrestler, you know?
Yeah, no, I love it. Well, Colt, thank you so much, dude. I knew that we were going to, not like we were setting out to prove a case of the link between independent music and independent wrestling, but I think we can settle this case, so to speak.
Yeah, you know, I always, and like, I know it's there, obviously, like, I always get so many messages for, and Twitter and Facebook messages from, like, from bands and from guys on the road. Like, I get it a lot, who listen to my podcast while they're on the road with their band, and they're just always like, it's just so parallel, and like, I love it. Whenever I hear that, like, you know, people are touring and listening to my show, like, I love it just as much as they love listening to it, because I have that same, you know, I don't know if it's romanticism or whatever it might be with comedy or whatever. So like, I get it a lot and I love it. And like, yeah, I think anyone in the quote unquote arts, you know, like musicians, comedians, even magicians, you know, like,
totally.
Yeah, whatever it might be, like, we're all kind of from the same, cut from the same cloth.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Colt. This has been super fun.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, seriously, if you listen to that and you don't, one, become a fan of him, and two, don't realize the similarities in what it is that, you know, maybe we do in the independent music scene and what Colt has done in independent wrestling, I don't think you were listening. But anyways, thank you so much, Colt, for coming on the show. It was awesome to obviously get to know him a little bit better. And then, yeah, have fun in the process. So the music, as always, provided for this show is by Lowercase Noises. Unbelievable stuff that he does. So Google him, find him on Bandcamp, Facebook, wherever it is you consume music, and you'll be able to listen to that. Email the show, 100wordspodcast@gmail.com, and you can visit the show's website at 100wordspodcast.com. But please, above all, just tell some friends, right? Tell some people who like podcasts or who like music, and have them dive into this, because, you know, at this point, we're knee deep in the amount of episodes that we have. That's what I was trying to think of, like, how to describe that. But so some people it might be impenetrable, but to other people it's just like, I just tell them, pick and choose, you know, dive into a few, and then hopefully by that point you'll start to get keyed into the show on a weekly basis. So there we go. And the guest next week is Max Bemis from Say Anything in Two Tongues. I had his bro, Chris Conley, from Two Tongues on a couple weeks ago. And Max was kind enough to make some time in his schedule, because he's a crazy schedule. He's like the type of guy that, you know, stays up all night and then, wakes up at like, 2, and then just stays up all night. It's just crazy. His work ethic and his family life, it's just all incredibly interesting. And he was super, super open with me. So anyways, that's next week. And yes, please be safe, everybody. Right? Okay. I'll talk to you then.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.